Now we're in the yellow book, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam, appearing, it's Krishna appearing in the literary form. It's his incarnation, many forms of Krishna, expands himself first into Baladev, and then there's Chaturvyuha, Baladev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and into the great forms, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shirdakshaya Vishnu. He expands himself into the different kinds of Leela in avatars, Yuga avatars, Manvantara avatars. He comes as the Archavigraha. He also expands himself into his literary forms, the Vedas, and especially the Srimad Bhagavatam in the age of Kali Yuga. Krishne swa damo pagate dharma ganadi bisaha kalo nashta drishamesha punar narko tanodita. That just after Krishna left for his own abode, the Srimad Bhagavatam appeared in order to deliver everyone from darkness. Tato jayam udirayat. And just by reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, one can conquer the hridrogam, which means the disease of the heart. And that's the condition that keeps one here in the material world, is a desire to lord it over matter and an attachment to matter. It's inordinate because we actually have no connection. Asango hyayam purushaha, the Vedanta Sutra says, we never have any connection with matter except for our own desire to possess it and control it. And how to reverse that is a conundrum. All great sages, since time immemorial, have been performing austerities, have been performing different kinds of yoga. But only the supreme yoga, yoginam api sarvesham madgatanan taratmana, shradhavan pachate yomam same yuktatamo mataha, can actually deliver one from this hridrogam, or this dreaded disease of the heart, which is to control matter, to enjoy matter. And therefore, shradhanvito nashrinuyad anuvarna yedya. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the manifestation of Krishna, by listening to which one's heart becomes freed from that condition of life. Vikriditam vrajabhadur vir aham cha vishnu shradhanvito nashrinuyad anuvarna yedya. Just by hearing the pastimes of the Srimad Bhagavatam and repeatedly, and with submissive oral reception, then sthanestita shrutigatam tanuvan manopir, one's external position doesn't matter, but gradually one will come to one's constitutional position as an intimate servant of the Lord. And in that condition, actually, Krishna feels indebted to the devotee and ultimately becomes controlled by the devotee. Ajita becomes jita. The unconquerable becomes conquered by love. Because it's such a profound thing, actually. As I was thinking this morning, that everyone has a right to do whatever he or she wants. Really, think about it. You can do whatever you want. Just decide and do it. And who will stop you? Similarly, there's a statement in the Nectar of Devotion in which it says that if someone desires to perform the austerity of taking an early morning bath in the month of Magh, when it's generally cold, that who can stop them? It's your right. If you want to perform austerities and worship Krishna, who can stop you? You can do it in any condition of life. We've seen Devaki and Vasudev, they gave birth to Krishna in prison. We've seen lots of other devotees too in prison who have performed devotional service without any hindrance. And in any condition of life, Bali Maharaj was captured by the ropes of Vasuki and tied up after he couldn't deliver the last bit of charity that he had promised. But still, from that position, he just offered his head. You can only move a little bit, but it's all right. It doesn't matter what condition you're in. So everyone has freedom to do whatever they like, actually, and especially in the human form of life. Other forms of life, you have to act according to the modes of nature. But a human form of life, you can do as you wish. You can get up early if you want and chant the names of the Lord all day long. Who can stop you? So we have the choice. And that's why it's so profound, because we do have the choice. We can decide to change our life. We can decide to surrender to Krishna. We can decide to render service to Krishna. And he reciprocates. The most wonderful thing, actually, is that Krishna wants us to know him. Teni brahma hridaye adikavaye muyanti yatsuraiha. He actually wants us to know who he is. He wants to reveal himself. And he's the supreme. So what does that mean? If I don't know him, it's not his fault. It's my own ignorance. It's avidya. And it just has to be removed. And Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna's incarnation. It is Krishna himself. It's the most amazing, mysterious thing, because the Lord appears in pen and ink and syllables. But it's him. It's manifest. And when those sound vibrations go within the ear and they enter within the heart, then the dreaded disease of materialistic life, which actually keeps me bound up life after life after life in the most embarrassing situation for the eternal soul, it becomes finished, conquered. And even in one life, pidyate hridaya grantish, that hard knot becomes cut by the power of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and by no other power. Tato jaya mudirayat. It's the power of Krishna, because he's the one who can do it. I can't do it independently of him. I have to surrender and consider that he's my protector. So those devotees, all of you who are here today to hear Srimad Bhagavatam on a Saturday morning, are the most fortunate souls in the Silicon Valley. Because we're about to hear the sound incarnation of Krishna and let it enter into our ears and into our hearts. So we're on text number 42. And this section is Bhishma Dev's prayers to the Lord and his final instructions that he gave to Yudhisthira, who is lamenting after the great battle of Kurukshetra. And this text is 42 on page 78 in the yellow book. Tam imam aham ajam sharira bhajam. Tamimam aham ajam sharira bhajam. Tamimam aham ajam sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi dhishtitam atmakalpitanam. Hridi hridi dhishtitam atmakalpitanam. Page 78. Pratidrisham iva naikadharkam ekam. Pratidrisham iva naikadharkam ekam. Pratidrisham eva naikardarkam ekam. Samadigato asmi vidhuta veda moha. Samadigato asmi vidhuta veda moha. Tam imam mahamajam sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi dishtitam atmakalpitanam. Pratitrisham iva naikardarkam ekam. Samadigato smi vidhuta beda moha. Tamimam maham ajam sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi dishtitam atmakalpitanam. Pratidrisham iva naikadharkam ekam. Samadhigatosmi vidhuta beda moha. Tamimam mahamajam sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi dishtitam atmakalpitanam. Pratidrishamiva naikatarkamekam. Samadhi gatosmi vidhuta bheda moha. Tami mam mahamajam sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi dishitam kalpitanam. Pratidrisham eva naikardarkam ekam. Samadhi gatosmi vidhuta beda moha. Tami mam maham bhajam sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi tishtitam atma kalpitanam. Pratidrisham eva naikartarkam ekam. Samadhi gatosmi vidhuta bheda moha. Tamimam maham majam sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi tishtitam atma kalpitanam. Pratidrisham eva naikardarkam ekam. Samadhi gatosmi vidhuta bheda moha. Tama cham cham sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi tishtitam atma kalpitanam. Pratidrisham eva naikardarkam ekam. Samadhi gatosmi vidhuta beda moha. Tam imam maham majam sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi tishtitam atma kalpitanam. Pratidrisham eva nikarkarkam ekam. Samadhi gatosmi vidhuta beda moha. Tami mam maham majam sharira bhajam. Hridi hridi tishtitam atma kalpitanam. Pratidrisham eva naikardarkam ekam. Samadhi gatosmi vidhuta beda moha. Tam, that personality of Godhead. Imam, now present before me. Aham, I. Ajam, the unborn. Sharira bhajam, of the conditioned soul. Hridi, in the heart. Hridi, in the heart. Dishtitam, situated. Atma, the supersoul. Kalpitanam, of the speculators. Pratidrisham, in every direction. Eva, like. Na ekada, not one. Arkam, the sun. Ekam, one only. Samadhi gata asmi, I have undergone trance in meditation. Viduta, being freed from. Bheda moha, Misconception of duality. Translation. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, now present before me, because now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart, even in the hearts of the mental speculators. He is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. Please repeat. Now I can meditate with full concentration. Upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna. Now present before me. Because now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart, even in the hearts of the mental speculators. He is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna is the one absolute supreme personality of Godhead, but he has expanded himself into his multi-plenary portions by his inconceivable energy. The conception of duality is due to ignorance of his inconceivable energy. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:11, the Lord says that only the foolish take him to be a mere human being. Such foolish men are not aware of his inconceivable energies. By his inconceivable energy, he is present in everyone's heart, as the sun is present before everyone all over the world. The Paramatma feature of the Lord is an expansion of his plenary portions. He expands himself as Paramatma in everyone's heart by his inconceivable energy, and he also expands himself as the glowing effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti by expansion of his personal glow. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita that the Brahma Jyoti is his personal glow. Therefore, there is no difference between him and his personal glow, Brahma Jyoti, or his plenary portions as Paramatma. Less intelligent persons who are not aware of this fact consider Brahma Jyoti and Paramatma to be different from Sri Krishna. This misconception of duality is completely removed from the mind of Bhishma Dev, and he is now satisfied that it is Lord Sri Krishna only who is all in all, in everything. This enlightenment is attained by the great Mahatmas or devotees, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:19, that Vasudev is all in all, in everything, and that there is no existence of anything without Vasudev. Vasudev, or Lord Sri Krishna, is the original Supreme Person, as now confirmed by a Mahajan, and therefore both the neophytes and the pure devotees must try to follow in his footsteps. That is the way of the devotional line. The worshipable object of Bhishma Dev is Lord Sri Krishna as Partha Sarathi, and that of the gopis is the same Krishna in Vrindavan as the most attractive Shyamasundara. Sometimes less intelligent scholars make a mistake and think that the Krishna of Vrindavan and that of the Battle of Kukshetra are different personalities. But for Bhishma Dev, this misconception is completely removed. Even the impersonalist object of destination is Krishna as the impersonal Jyoti, and the yogi's destination of Paramatma is also Krishna. Krishna is both Brahma Jyoti and localized Paramatma, but in Brahma Jyoti or Paramatma there is no Krishna or sweet relations with Krishna. In his personal feature, Krishna is both Partasarthi and Shyamasundara of Vrindavan, but in his impersonal feature he is neither in the Brahma Jyoti nor in the Paramatma. Great Mahatmas like Bhishma Dev realize all these different features of Lord Sri Krishna, and therefore they worship Lord Krishna, knowing him as the origin of all features. Vande hum. Can someone show Sunny where the Mangalacharan is before we start? Vande hum Sri Guru Sri Uta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam sadvadhutam parijana sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitam Sha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Prachadine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Sri Varshabha Navi Devi Daitaya Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhuryo Jvala Premadya Sri Rupanuka Bhaktida Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Shri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvantaharine Namo Gaurakishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambode Padambujayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sakchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gaura Virvava Bhomestvam Nirdesa Sajjana Priya Vaishnava Sarva Bhoma Shri Jagannathaya Namaha Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha Panchatatvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatam Sudato Pangor Mama Manda Matergati Matsarva Swapadambo Jau Radha Manana Mohano Divya Vrindaranya Kalpadrumata Srimadratna Karashingha Sanasto Srimadradha Srila Govinda Devo Prishtali Viseva Manusmarami Srimadrashara Sharambi Vamshivata Tatastita Karshan Venu Swanir Gopir Gopinata Sriestunaha Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindabhanishwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindai Tulsi Devai Priyai Keshavasyacha Vishnu Bhakti Pradi Devi Satyavachai Namo Namaha Sri Nishringa Jai Nishringa Jai Jai Narasingha Pralada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Matsamo Nasti Papapma Naparadi Chakashana Parihade Pilajami Kim Bruve Purushottama Yuvatinam Yata Yuni Yunam Cha Yuvatau Yata Mano Biramate Tadvan Mano me ramatam twayi Bhumau skalita paranam Bhumireva valambanam Twayi jata parananam Tvameva sharanam prabho Govinda balabe radhe Prate twam maham sada Tvadiyam iti janatu Govindo mam twayasaha Radhe Vrindavanadi She Karunamrita Vahani Kripaya Nijapadabja Dasyam Mayam Pradiyatam Vande Nanda Vrajastrinam Padarenum Abhikshnasaha Yasam Hari Kato Gitam Punati Bhuvanatrayam Namasrestam Manamapi Shachiputram Matra Sarupam Sri Rupam Tasya Gajamaruparim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramoho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tannatosmi Adadhana Sridam Danter Idam Jache Puna Puna Sriman Rupa Padam Bhoja Rajoham Syam Bhave Bhave Hantaya Madhur Abala Haridasya Varyo Yadrama Krishna Charana Svarasha Pramoda Manam Tanoti Sahago Ganayostayo Yat Paniya Suyavasakanda Nakanda Mulai Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tamimam ham ajam sharira bhajam, hridi hridi dishtitam atmakalpitanam, pratidrisham eva naikadharkamekam. Samarigatosmi vidhuta beda moha. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, now present before me, because now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart. Even in the hearts of the mental speculators, he is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. Muyanti Yatsurayaha. In the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva says, Muyanti Yatsurayaha, that even the great sages are bewildered, even the demigods, are bewildered in understanding who is Krishna. Especially when he comes for his pastimes in Gokula Vrindavan, he's acting like an ordinary human being, and the demigods, seeing the activities of Krishna acting as a human being, find it hard to understand how he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet as we've heard many times, how Brahma found out for himself. In fact, when he comes in that way, he's even telling the human beings, don't worship the devas. He told the residents of Vrindavan that they could give up, they should give up the worship of Indra, who is the chief god, demigod. And he said, why are you worshiping Indra? He's not the actual ultimate supplier of water and rain and everything. It comes automatically. He was espousing some philosophy of karma mimamsa, that the rituals from the Vedas, if performed, obligate the Supreme Lord or the demigods. It's beyond their control. In fact, if you perform your rituals, then the rain will come automatically. And it's raining on the ocean and it's raining on the land anyway, so what do you think Indra has to do with it? He talked Nanda Maharaj out of performing the Indra Yajna, which had been going on since time immemorial in that village. And he said, actually, just worship Govardhan, actually. Govardhan's giving grass and water and a pleasing environment. There's fruits and flowers. Everything is there necessary for the cows. And after all, you're worshiping Indra, so the rain will come and the grass will grow and the cows will be able to eat. And the society will go on nicely, but you don't need to. You just worship Govardhan instead of Indra. And Indra, because he's so opulent and powerful, and he has a tendency to become overwhelmed with pride, he became incensed by this little boy talking the villagers into not offering him his normal worship. And so, of course, he retaliated. After the residents of Vrindavan had performed the Govardhan Puja ceremony, then Indra inundated the place with huge storms, and chunks of ice were falling from the sky. And Krishna then lifted the hill and held it aloft on his little finger of his left hand for 7 days. And during that time, Indra, sending the Samvartaka clouds, which are these personified clouds, to destroy the residents of Vrindavan and inundate the place, came back and reported to Indra at intervals that not a drop of water had touched the residents there. And in fact, underneath the hill, there were residential palaces and ornate living quarters, and everyone came there at that time. In fact, it was the place at Govardhan is celebrated because all of the residents of Vrindavan who have all different kinds of relationship with Krishna were all there at the same time and exchanging rasa with Krishna at the same time simultaneously while they were there under Govardhan Hill. And not only that, although Govardhan was taking the brunt of the attack from Indra, and huge chunks of ice were coming, because he was being touched by the finger of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was feeling so much ecstasy that he didn't even notice the pelting of those chunks of ice coming from the clouds. He was oblivious to that. And when Indra realized that he was fighting against a superior power, then he deceased, and Krishna put the hill back down again, and everyone went back to their lives. And a couple days later, Indra came with Surabhi, because he had gone to Brahma to find out, how should I appease Krishna after this? Because he went to Brahma and said, after all, you also made an offense. Because you stole away the cowherd boys and the calves from Krishna previously and tried to play this trick to see the mystic potency of the Lord, to see if he had that much potency. And you had become bewildered, and so can you tell me what to do? And Brahma said, you know, but I didn't try to kill everybody. It wasn't like I just stole a few calves, but I didn't send the reigns of devastation to try to kill the residents of Vrindavan, so I don't, you know, I can't really help you that much. But he did recommend that you go with Surabhi. So Surabhi's the celestial cow, and she came along with Indra, because Indra knew if the cow was there, this great devotee cow, that she would be able to appease Krishna a little bit easier. And in fact, one of the qualities of Krishna is he's so kind and humble that when Indra did come before him, you know, Krishna said, you know, I hope I didn't disturb you in any way by taking away your yajna. And Indra apologized. And also Surabhi offered prayers to Krishna and said that actually, you know, Indra is the king of the heavenly planets, but you are the real Indra. You are Indra, because you're the most powerful. Indra is nothing in comparison to your power, has no power compared to yours. It's all derived from you, ultimately. And they anointed Krishna. They came and they did an abhishek. The elephant of Indra is named Airavata, and he bathed Krishna with his trunk. And also the Surabhi cow gave her milk and bathed Krishna there. The kunds that are around Govardhan Hill were all formed from this Abhishek that took place. And the footprint of Airavata is still there in one place you can go see, top of a hill. If you care to stop and walk up a little bit distance on the hill, they have one stone where the footprint of Airavata is still there from performing that pastime. So the demigods are bewildered by Krishna's power, and he has unlimited potencies. Even though he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he expands himself. Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdite. In this verse, Bhishma Devas, at the time of death, at the final time when before he's leaving his body, he's seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead before him, but he's also realizing and expressing how all the energies in the world, everything is coming from Krishna. The Brahma Jyoti is coming from Krishna. Amritasya vayasya shashvatasya sadharmasya sukasya kandikasya brahmano hi pratishtaham. That Krishna is the basis of the impersonal Brahman and the Paramatma, who's expanded everywhere. Ekop yaso racharitum jagananda koti yat shakti rasti jagananda chayayananta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. That Paramatma is also coming from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's inconceivable potency how Krishna can be all-pervading and also be one at the person in one place at the same time and perform pastimes. How can someone who is everywhere also be in one place? This was experienced by Mother Yashoda when she tried to bind Krishna, because Krishna had, she was nursing him when he was a baby, and actually she was making some milk preparation on the stove, and it was special milk too. It was all for Krishna, because Krishna was going around stealing milk, and she was stealing butter especially from different places. So they started thinking, well, maybe because our butter isn't good enough and our milk products aren't good enough, maybe that's why he's going other places and stealing. He was a problem child. And they were trying to figure out how to remedy that. So they made a plan to get all the best cows out of the gigantic herd of cows that Nanda Maharaj had. I forget how many he had, but it was in the tens, hundreds of thousands of cows. How many? 10 million cows Nanda Maharaj had? He had a lot of cows. And they selected the best cows out of the herd, and then they'd feed them all only the best grasses. And then they'd get that milk, and that was the milk that was actually on the stove, and they were, you know, making milk preparations like that for Krishna. In any case, when Mother Yashoda put Krishna down to go see that the milk was overboiling, you can imagine, I mean, she's doing service for Krishna, making, you know, all this preparation to get the best milk, and then puts him down and then goes, and then he became angry for being neglected and being set down. So he broke the butter pot that was nearby and then ran off. And when Mother Yashoda came back and saw that the butter pot had been broken and Krishna was gone, she began to search him out. And mostly it was out of a fear for him that he was too agitated, but she started chasing after him and he was running away. So Queen Kunti in her prayers talks about this, about how wonderful it is that although he is the Supreme, he's all-pervading, he's the unlimited personality of Godhead, but still there's this scene of Mother Yashoda chasing after him, and Krishna's showing symptoms of fear. He's afraid of Mother Yashoda, and tears of fear are coming from his eyes, and he's running away. So finally, although he's the Supreme Lord, and as it says in the Sri Upanishad, anejarikam manaso javiyo naina deva apnuvam purvanarshat tadavato nyanateti tishta tasmirapo matarishva tadati, that he can't be approached even by the powerful demigods running at full speed with all their power. They can't catch up to him, but Mother Yashoda could catch up to him, because she's a great devotee, and Krishna allows himself to be handled by his devotees. So she caught him, and she wanted to punish him and to calm him down because he was breaking things and running away. So in the village, the tradition was to tie the child up and let him calm down for a little while. So she took some rope, and there's plenty of rope around a cow village. I mean, there's rope everywhere. There's rope for all kinds of things. And the neighbors were watching this whole thing because, you know, they knew Krishna was here, there, and everywhere, stealing things and breaking into people's houses. And so they were sort of amused at the whole thing, and they were looking over the wall, and they were throwing more rope in. So, here, try this. And she'd take more rope, tie it together, put it around Krishna's waist, Damodara, which means, you know, rope around, tying his rope around his belly, his abdomen. But every time it was 2 inches too short. And Jiva Goswami talks about in the Gopal Champu how actually Mother Jashoda, I mean, there's different descriptions in different places, but how she even took the ribbon from her hair. You know, she's in this Vatsalya Ras, and it's so elaborately described and so beautiful, you know, how she was taking the ribbon even from her hair and tying that around Krishna, and even that was too short. So all the rope, all the ribbon, whatever she could get a hold of, and still 2 inches too short. But then, finally, Krishna, seeing that she was perspiring and laboring very hard to tie him up, allowed himself to be tied and bound to this mortar. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has said that there's 2 inches that are too short, and the 1 inch is represents the endeavor of the devotee, and the other inch represents Krishna allowing himself to be tied up. So both things have to be there. One is our endeavor has to be there, and also Krishna's will has to be there. It's a descending process, but as Prabhupada said, Arjuna on the battlefield of Kukshetra, when he got the instructions from Krishna, he didn't say, okay, then because things are happening by your supreme will. In other words, Krishna showed in the universal form that, look, I'm going to kill Duryodhana, and I'm killing all these people. It's going to happen. It's happening by the power of my eternal Kala. And Arjuna didn't just say, then I'll sit down in the chariot and smoke ganja. And you do it. But actually he said, now I've understood. I'm free from illusion. And what that meant was, now I'm ready to act according to your direction. He knew that Krishna was doing it. He knew that he was an instrument, but still he was going to fight on Krishna's behalf. So both things are there. The endeavor of the devotee, and also Krishna's supreme will in directing the devotee. And when Mother Jashoda was able to tie Krishna, of course, soon afterwards, he dragged that grinding mortar in between the twin Arjun trees. You can still see many Arjun trees in Vrindavan. Someone was pointing them out to me on the way when we were driving to Govardhan last time. There's lots of Arjun trees. They're very stout, strong trees. One of the strongest trees with a deep root system. It's very hard to pull down. And Krishna pulled those trees down by wedging the mortar in between, and the trees came crashing to the ground. So even though Krishna's a little baby, his potencies, his powers are unlimited. And he can, even though he's all-pervading, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, he's within every atom, he's represented by the Brahma Jyoti. He is the Brahma Jyoti. It's his energy, so therefore it's non-different from him. He's the Paramatma who's expanded in everyone's heart, and he's also the personality of Godhead. But even as the personality of Godhead, he expands himself into unlimited forms. When Narada Muni came to Dwarka, he wanted to see where Krishna lived and see how he was living, because he had heard that Krishna had married 16,108 wives. Individually, he had married 8 wives in different pastimes that are related in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Lakshmana, Bhadra, Satya, Kalindi, Mitravindra. So those eight he married at separate times. And then how did he marry the 16,100? Bhumasura had kidnapped them. And they had no prospect after that, after being kidnapped, being taken out of their homes. So they prayed to Krishna, actually. They said, you know, we're insignificant, but we don't want anybody else as our husband. Please accept us. And that's Krishna's mercy. Anyone who comes to pray to him, doesn't matter what their previous activities or doesn't matter what their present qualification, if they're sincerely praying to Krishna, please accept me, and then Krishna will accept them. So Krishna accepted 16,100 princesses, and he took them back to Dwarka, and then he had eight other wives, so 16,108 wives. As he had showed to Satya before he married her, how did he marry her? He had to subdue seven strong bulls, and those bulls had broken the limbs of many other kshatriyas because they hated kshatriyas. They didn't like even the smell of princes. When they, if a prince came in there, they'd get really agitated. And they were very puffed up too because they were so strong. So when the princes would come in to wrestle with him, because that was the prerequisite that the king had said, that if you can wrestle these seven bulls to submission, then you can have my daughter. So many princes came in, rolled up their sleeves, got in there, and got thrashed by these bulls. But when Krishna came, he subdued the seven bulls easily, and he expanded himself into seven. Of course, he could have done it easily just by his will, but in his pastime, he expanded himself into seven Krishnas. And then he, you know, each Krishna grabbed a bull and wrestled it into submission, and he put, you know, rope through the noses of the bulls and brought them back to the king and said, here they are. And the bulls came back all, you know, humble because they had been beaten so soundly. One of the reasons that Krishna, the main reason Krishna had expanded himself into seven was to show his future wife, his prospective wife, Satya, that even though you know I have other wives, you won't have to wait for me because I can expand myself. That's why he did it. So then he brought the bulls to submission. He married Satya. And when Narada Muni had heard about all the wives of Krishna, 16,108 wives, and what was going on in Dwarka, and he wanted to go see, because the devotees of the Lord are always amazed at the pastimes of the Lord. They're always amazing. There's never a second at which the devotees lose their taste. This is called Nitya Navana Vayamana. It's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Shukadeva Goswami that the pastimes of the Lord are ever fresh. Everything the Lord does is ever fresh. In fact, whatever he speaks is ever fresh. That's why the Bhagavad Gita, 5,000 years later, everyone wants to read it. And not just once, but over and over again. You can read one shloka over and over again. You can read one chapter over and over again. Every time, new meaning comes out of it. That's the nature of Krishna, Nitya Navana Vayamana. And all his pastimes are like that too. Even in the course of his pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan, he performs the same pastimes over and over again. But to the devotees, they're ever fresh. They're always amazing. And Narada Muni had heard about the 16,108 wives, so he went to Dwarka to see Krishna, and he wanted to see how he was living with all these queens. Well, when he got to Dwarka, of course, Dwarka was a huge city. There were, you know, millions and millions of people who lived there. And it's a very beautiful city, very well organized. All the intersections were, you know, traffic was flowing nicely. And Krishna lived within Dwarka in his palaces in a gated community. In other words, it was a separate part of Dwarka that he lived in. There was the residential places of everyone else, and then Krishna had all his 16,108 palaces. He actually had palaces for each one of his wives. So Narada went into that compound where Krishna's palaces were, and the first place he went was the palace of Rukmini, his chief queen. And when he went in to see Krishna and Rukmini, Krishna saw him, and as he is called Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagati Taya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. He's the worshipper of the cows and the Brahmins. Krishna himself worships the cows and the Brahmins. So when Narada came in, Krishna got down from the seat where he was being worshipped by Rukmini, and he put Narada in that seat, and he began to personally worship Narada Muni by washing his feet, offering him all kinds of scented oils, fanning him, and giving him all kinds of comforts and worship, as one would do for a respectable person. When we do in the deity worship, when you do puja, there are all kinds of articles that you offer to the Lord, to the deity form of the Lord, who is non-different from the Lord also. Another expansion of the Lord, the Archa Vigraha, as we mentioned earlier, that Krishna, because we can't even see the soul. When someone leaves their body, no one can see what happened. They just saw that he was here, and now he's not here. No, he's right there. No, I didn't see. Where did he go? Where is he? You can't see the soul with mundane eyes. He just flies off, you know, and goes to the next destination. We can't see it, but the body's, you know, he's gone, obviously gone. Anyone could see that. So what to speak of not seeing the soul? We can't see Krishna's transcendental form without divine eyes. And therefore, he actually comes in this form because he wants us to know him. He wants us to be able to see him, even though we don't have the qualification yet. So he comes in the archa form, and he manifests in the form of marble or stone or metal or jewels. Incidentally, it says in the Shastra that the Shalagram Shila doesn't need installation because he's already self-manifested, but he represents the jewel category of the Lord, that he's manifest in that form. But in any case, the Lord comes in many different forms so that we can see him and expands in that way. So Krishna had expanded himself into 16,108 forms. Anyway, he was worshiping Narada Muni and offering him all kinds of articles. And after that, Narada Muni went out of that palace, and he went into the next palace nearby. And there, Krishna was speaking with Uddhava, his best friend, and who was also Krishna's counselor. He took counsel from Uddhava, who would, the king takes counsel. Krishna was acting as king, and then Uddhava was acting as his counselor and giving him advice as a minister. But when he walked in that next palace where Uddhava was, Krishna again looked at Narada as if it was seeing him for the first time. It's, oh, welcome, please sit down, and began worshiping him again. And then Narada left that palace and he went into another palace where Krishna was playing chess with somebody. And he went into another palace where Krishna was playing with his children. They were riding on his back, like Krishna was playing like a horse, and then he was carrying them around. And in this way, Narada Muni was amazed because he saw the same Krishna was in each and every palace, but he was performing different pastimes. So this is inconceivable power of the Lord. Parashya Shakti Vividaya Vishuyate. So Bhavika Jnana Bala Kriyacha. Krishna's energies act so wonderfully that even sometimes Krishna is amazed at their energies. Someone might say, well, how can you say that? Because doesn't God know everything? And he's in control of all his powers and energies. Therefore, how is it that God could not know what his energies are doing? But if you say that, then you can say that there's a way that God can't be amazed by his energies, so that's something he can't do. But he can also do that, and then also simultaneously understand how they're working. Parashya Shaktir Vividaya Vishuyate Svabhavika Jnana Balakriya Cha. They're so amazing that, of course, he can be amazed by his own energies because he's God. He can do that if he likes. Yoga Maya means an inconceivable potency, actually. And this is the meaning of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If there's any meaning, Jiva Goswami said, it means that he has unlimited potencies to do whatever he likes, so he can expand himself into all these forms in different ways. And here, Bhishma Dev is seeing, at the end of his life, how Krishna is everything and in all places. It doesn't mean that he understands everything. He just sees how Krishna is so powerful and how he's expanded everywhere, because his energies are inconceivable. They're achintya. Even in this material world where we say, oh, it's just the external energy of the Lord, even these energies are achintya. And Prabhupada used to point that out sometimes on morning walks. He would point out, like, how do you explain the seed? You take a lemon seed and you take a eggplant seed, plant them in the ground, and out of one side comes a lemon tree and outside an eggplant. And just from that one seed and that one plant, so much ascorbic acid comes out of the lemon. And from the other plant, an eggplant grows. It's practically inconceivable how that happens. You can't recreate a seed. Try it. It's impossible. So his energies are inconceivable in the material world, in the spiritual world, in every aspect. So the devotees come to this point, as Bhishma Dev is expressing here, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. And they simply surrender to the Lord. They say Krishna is everything, and he's acting in all ways. And it's not that they endlessly speculate to try to figure out his energies, but they see that Krishna is so great, he's so wonderful, they simply surrender unto him and perform devotional service. It's spontaneous devotional service in that they see that he's controlling everything, he's the greatest. But in Vrindavan, they actually don't even see, because Vrindavan is dominated by madhurya. It means the sweetness of the pastimes of Krishna, his relationships with the devotees. All the power and aishwarya is there within Goloka Vrindavan, but it's eclipsed by the sweetness of the relationships that he has with his devotees. After Krishna rescued his father from Varuna Dev's men, he had gone after, actually it's in the pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill. After he lifted Govardhan Hill, and 2 days later, Indra came, he offered his prayers, Surabhi offered her prayers, and then the next day was Ekadashi, and then the day after that was Dwadashi. And on Dwadashi, Nanda Maharaj, who had fasted all day on Ekadashi, went to take bath early in the morning. But it was a special kind of Dwadashi, and the timing he got a little bit wrong, and he went into to bathe in the river, and as he had gone down into the river, then it was the wrong time of day to bathe, too early. Did you know you could get arrested for bathing too early? You can get arrested for that. And so one of Varuna Dev's men came and arrested him and brought him back to to Varuna. It's described how he was demoniac for doing that. But he did it, and he brought him back to Varuna Dev, and Varuna then saw that Krishna had come to rescue Nanda Maharaj, and he began to worship him. And Nanda Maharaj was amazed, because he just thought, well, here's my son. What are all these demigods doing worshiping my son? I heard from Gargamuni that he was, you know, he would have some of the power of Vishnu. When he was given the name at the name-giving ceremony, Gargamuni had recounted that there are different incarnations of the Lord that come in different colors and things. Your son's very unusual. He's something like Narayan. He has these powers. So Nanda was saying, oh, he really does. Look at all these demigods are coming and worshiping. And he was so amazed. And when he told the cowherd men afterwards, after he had been released from the clutches of Varuna, and he said, you know, my son came to get me. And when he did, Varuna and all these other great personalities came and worshipped him and bowed down before him. And they said, they all started saying, well, maybe, you know, Gargamuni said, you told us that he was Narayan. Maybe he really is. What if he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead all this time? So they thought, well, you know, maybe he can show us what our future is. And Krishna could understand their minds, that they were thinking, you know, will we get liberation? Of course, they're eternally liberated souls, but they're playing in this pastime with Krishna and this Leela. So Krishna revealed to them that actually their destination was in the spiritual world, and that they would be liberated after this, so-called liberated, because they were already liberated. They were in Krishna's pastimes. But he was revealing to them some things. But then afterwards, they saw that they treated him just like an ordinary boy, because that Madhurya, the sweetness of their relationship, it covers over any of the power that they see in Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's eclipsed by that. So the devotees are covered by yoga maya, and in the material world, the jivas are covered by Krishna's external energy. Tribir gunamayer bhavir ebi sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabijananti mamebhya paramavyam. Vishnu maya is so powerful that it covers everybody's intelligence and knowledge. They can't even, sometimes they think, well, there's no God. I mean, it's obvious that there is a God. Otherwise, where does everything come from? How's the sun and the moon going on? But, you know, covered by the external energy, then I can think that I'm separate from God, and I am God. There are many misconceptions that come about. Vishnu Maya is so powerful. And again, Muyanti Yatsurayaha. Krishna's energies are so powerful, even the gods get bewildered by them, and get overcome by those great powers. So, in the spiritual world, the material world, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, the Srila Prabhupada is saying here in the purport that Bhishma Dev is a Mahajan, and the Mahajans are giving us the correct and standard knowledge to understand Krishna and how to conduct ourselves in devotional service. And it's a natural thing to have Mahajans. I saw that when President Obama, before he took office, he was reading all these books about Lincoln and Roosevelt. He was talking about this, how, you know, he was reading up on all the previous acharyas and Mahajans. Because United States, it's this 200-year-old experiment of freedom of expression and, you know, combinations of religions, things like that, supposedly working together. And, you know, there's a system, and there's a, you know, there's a Shastra that goes along with it, which is the Constitution, which is followed just like Shastra. You have to refer to it in all the different kinds of cases if you want to make any changes. It's very difficult, and so on and so forth. And so he is referring, before he took office, to, you know, how did Lincoln do it? How did he speak? How did he walk? How did he sit? and the others, too. It's a natural thing. Natural thing. And it's natural for living beings also to look towards the Supreme. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sada Pashanti Suryaho. You could see, I hope I'm not on a tangent here, but at the inauguration, did anybody hear that or see that? There was an inauguration for the new president, and it was in Washington, D.C., and over 1 million people came, I think. It was a big deal, but everyone, even days before the inauguration, they were singing and dancing in the streets because a new leader was coming. And I was just thinking how, you know, in Ram Raj, when Ramachandra was present, that everyone was happy all the time because they had a real king. And when you go to Thailand, everyone wears a picture of the king around their neck. And you can't say anything about the king. If you do, you'll go to jail. If you say, the king's a jerk or something like that, it's like, they'll lock you up for it. You can't blaspheme the king. But they love him. They actually love the king. When he comes to town, when his birthday happens, they have these big celebrations. They close the whole place down. There's flower arrangements everywhere. There's pictures everywhere. Pictures at the airport all year long. It's a big deal. And they're kind of happy, you know, because they have someone to look to. Actually a pretty good king, too. He's smart. He's educated. And he does things. He's not a corrupt person, for the most part. And he helps out, tries to do projects to help. And they're happy, you know, to have a king. Everyone, every living entity, when they know that there's going to be a benevolent ruler, they become happy because it's the nature. So when the living entities find out that they actually have the best ruler of all, Krishna, that they can surrender to, then their real happiness begins. So Vasudeva Sarva Miti Sa Mahatma Sudurlabha. Then the person's life becomes auspicious because they know where to place their energy. Sarva Bhuteshu Ya Pashyed Bhagavan Bhavamatmanaha Bhutani Bhagavadyatmani Esha Bhagavatotama. And it's described how a person like Bhishma Dev in this state of consciousness sees everything in relationship to Krishna. He sees all energies that are working anywhere are actually coming from Krishna. They're part of him. And their sentiment is to engage them in his service and to engage in his service at all times. So this is the fact. God is everywhere. He's within everything and in every minute. And also mentioned here, he's within everyone's heart. This has gone into early on in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the second canto by Shukadev Goswami, when in the chapter called Lord in the Heart, where he describes how Paramatma, Krishna, is actually present there, personally. It's not like in Christianity they say the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And what is the Holy Ghost anyway? I mean, what is a Holy Ghost? It sounds a little amorphous, doesn't it? I mean, most people don't know what ghosts are. When I grew up, there was a cartoon called Casper. And he was a ghost, you know, that I guess he was a good ghost, but if he was a friendly ghost, he was a friendly ghost, as a matter of fact. But other than that, who knows what a ghost is, really? If we say Father, Son, the Holy Ghost is supposed to be kind of you get filled with the Spirit. But actually, Shukadeva Goswami describes how Krishna really is present there in his personal form with all his attributes and his forearm form, holding conch, disc, lotus. What else? Did I miss chakra? And the chakra. So, and a lotus. Club, lotus, disc. Now what did I miss? A chakra. Shankha, chakra. Gada Padma. Okay. He has all those attributes, and also the yogis can actually meditate on him, and they start with his lotus feet. And on his lotus feet, there are markings. There's specific markings where they can see thunderbolt. That thunderbolt, when the yogis meditate on it, even if one has a mountain of sin accumulated after many lives in the material world, that thunderbolt smashes the mountain. It breaks it to pieces. And then there's barley corn on the marking on his lotus feet. What else? There's a fish. Oh, what? A plow. Okay, so all these, what else? Fish, Padma, plow. You know a lot about it. You've been meditating. By meditating there, then, all the sins are destroyed. One gets all auspiciousness. You know, so that's described, how he's actually there within the heart. It's not that God is far away, actually. Tad ejati, tad naijati, tad dure, tad vantike, tad antarasya sarvasya tudu sarvasya sibayat. He's far away, but he's very near as well. He's within everything, yet he's outside of everything. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshavastita. So that we don't speed read through the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, you know, makes these statements about how I'm within everything and yet I'm outside of everything. It's inconceivable how he has his own personality, and yet he is everything at the same time. But that's the way he is. That's how wonderful Krishna is. So the ultimate conclusion is, from Bhishma Dev, is to engage in loving service to the Lord. That's the ultimate conclusion. So, Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatma Sudurlabhada. Come to this conclusion that Krishna's everywhere, within everything, within my heart. And then just to surrender to him, this is the perfection of life. And so we luckily can follow in the footsteps of Bhishma Dev and perform this, because we're getting this knowledge and information that's being passed down through the parampara. And by this, our life becomes perfect. And just as Bhishma Dev was able to fix his mind on Krishna at the time of death by Krishna's causeless mercy, we'll also have that opportunity to make life a complete success. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna. Shri Bhishma Dev Ki Jai. Gopremanande. Any complaints? Yeah.
One of the points you mentioned while talking about the energies, Krishna even, he's amazed by his own energy. He sometimes he cannot understand his own greatness or potencies. So the reason is why he cannot be amazed, because he's God. So he can be amazed if he wants. So is there any attribute or so-called negative attributes which can be applicable to Krishna? For example, can he be under ignorance?
Yeah, negative attributes. Krishna's the ranchor. You know, he runs away. Jarasandha fought 17 times. He came to attack, and he was wiped out every single time. I mean, obliterated. It means everyone in his whole army was, it was a river of blood. And then finally, on the last time, Krishna and Balaram ran away. So he's called Ranchor. But, you know, you might say, he's a Kshatriya and he ran away from the battle, you know. But he's worshipped for it. There's temples of Ranchorji where they worship Krishna as Ranchor. And he's a thief also. You know, he's celebrated as Makanchor. And normally thieves, you don't want him around or anything, but, you know, Krishna's a thief, he steals. In fact, there's an old story about two policemen in Mathura, and one of them's scratching his head and saying, you know, this is a little silly because we're supposed to be upholding the law, and our God here is a thief. And the other one says, well, that's a lucky thing because actually, you know, people keep up these high walls and they put all these locks on their doors so, for the, you know, the thieves don't get in, but thieves, you know, get in one way or another. He said, Krishna's the most expert thief. We keep around our heart a wall so that Krishna, you know, can't get in and take away our material attachments because I think, oh, these are mine. I'm going to keep these. But he's so expert, he figures a way to get in and take away our material attachments, and that's why he's known as Hari, and he's a thief. So, yeah, the negative attributes are there, so-called negative, but because Krishna is absolute, those things become wonderful. They become celebrated. And, you know, this ancient, you know, conundrum of trying to trap the theist, it's called try to stump the theist. And they say, okay, well, God's all-powerful. Can he make a mountain that he can't lift himself? And Prabhupada answered that. He said, yes, he can do that. And then he'll lift it. Because his energies are always expanding and they're unlimited. So he can make a mountain that's so heavy he can't lift it himself, and then he'll lift it afterwards in some other way. That's called inconceivable potency. And though all those potencies, too, are personified. Everything's a person. As we read in the Brahma Sanghita, how he's creating the universe, and even his glance takes on a personified form. And, you know, when Priyavrata is sitting, he's thinking he's going to take sannyas and be a brahmacharya his whole life and everything. And then Brahma, he needs people to make the universe expand. He needs some actual, you know, progenitors, and, you know, he's got to get things going in the universe. So he's coming down to convince Priyavrata that you need to take up this work, you know. What was my point? Oh, hi, Dave. So, where was I going? Yes.
I have another follow-up question.
Okay. I had a point on Priyavrata, though, but maybe okay. It'll come back to me. I'm sorry, spaced out. Huh? Go ahead, ask the point.
Well, so if Krishna has these negative qualities and he can make a mountain so big he can't lift it, then how we argue, the Mayavadis say, I am Krishna, but I am in ignorance because it's my lila, right? They say that I've become covered by my illusory potency because I wanted to, and then when I become liberated or when I become in knowledge, then I'll realize that I am God, and that. But in the meantime, I'm enjoying my lila of material enjoyment and suffering. So how? But we tell them, you know, this is idiotic. Krishna can't be covered by his illusion. He's never illusion. So how do we reconcile? Well,
I don't know reconciliation, but I could tell you what Brahma would say. About, you know, it's our lila to kick on your face with a boot. You were going to say that, I could tell. We'll kick on your face with a boot. And, you know, a lot of times these ideas, they don't really translate out so well. You know, like Prabhupada was talking to some gentleman about this idea of Mayavad. He was saying, you know, it's all the same, you're the same, I'm the same, it's all one thing, kind of thing. Prabhupada said, it's cotton ball, it's cotton shirt, is it the same? And the man kept talking, and finally Prabhupada grabbed him by the shirt and said, when I say cotton ball or cotton shirt, is it the same? And then, you know, he was sort of startled and said, no, no, it's different. But there's also, you know, really practical things. I remember when Yashodhanandan and Guru Kripa, they had just taken sannyasa, and they were down in South India, and they were preaching. It was all new, and they were making life members. And some really rich guy was saying how, you know, it's all Brahman. This is Brahman, that's Brahman. And they said, well, let's open your safe and let that Brahman out. Let's liberate the Brahman that's in your safe. It's sort of a, you know, when it comes to the practical application, Krishna can manifest his universal form. And, you know, Pondraka, he tried to imitate Krishna, but he was defeated. You know, someone may claim that I'm just, you know, God under illusion, but in the next moment, can they then also manifest their universal form or show some, you know, some power? Krishna can do that, but others can't. And even when he's a little baby, you know, he kicks over the Shakatashura demon with his little tiny foot. He manifests his potencies from all different angles and at all ages of his leela. Yes.
Reconciling these two apparently contradicting points of view, I've thought enough about it, and I want to say something, and I may be wrong, but you may be off about it, but let's go through it. So I see in front of me, Vaisheshika Prabhu, you are sitting here, right? You have a body, and you have a soul, and you have super soul sitting there. Now, I have also in front of me a black limo in which there is a driver and there is a president of, say, US sitting inside. Now, when I see that black limo, do I say that it is the driver inside or it is the president inside? It is the president's car. Similarly, when I look at you, I know there is a soul inside, but actually it is Krishna inside. So when I see you, I should see Krishna inside you. So when I see all of you, I should actually see Krishna inside you. Till then, it is my ignorance. So that is the point, I think, when I try to reconcile that you are all Krishnas. Whether I identify you with the driver of that car or the president of the car, and whether the driver himself starts thinking he is president, no, that is his ignorance. So I think if we see that example, analogy of the president's car, as soon as you see a black limo going there and you see, think it is the driver inside, no, that is wrong. It is the president inside. The driver is a driver who is driving as per the instructions of the president. The president says, take me to the Capitol Hill, but he instead takes him to the movie theater. That is the soul's ignorance, that the soul ignores the president's, the God's instructions. God says, take me to the temple, and he instead takes him to the movie theater. That is the soul's ignorance. But, so if I look at other people, I actually see, I should be able to see, and I try to see, that it is Krishna. So why do we say that Mayavadis are wrong? Because they are actually trying to see Krishna in the people. That is, I'm thinking that way. That is my current state of analysis.
So,
and I'm open to criticism now.
Okay. That's good. You wanted to say first?
No, if you have something.
Okay, well, of course, Sri Shapanishad gives a similar vision that you're pointing out. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanu pashyati. Sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatona vijagupsate. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmai vadbud vijanataha tatrako mohakashoka ekatvan manupashita. One who always sees everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord and sees the Supreme Lord within everything becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord sees things as they are. This is explained by the Sri Shapanishad. The vision of a uttam adhikari is being explained there, that he will see everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord. But the subtlety of it is being pointed out in this verse in purport that although Krishna is one, he's everywhere, he is one Advaita Gyan Tattva, he's one absolute truth, there are also differences at the same time. This is called Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference. And throughout the ages, from different teachers of spiritual knowledge, there have been different angles of vision on how, well, some say that Krishna is only one and there's no difference, but then there's qualified understandings of how Krishna is different at the same time. And in Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, he's simultaneously one and different. So, however, there is a difference between the soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mistake, you say, of the Mayavadis is to assume that they're one and the same. So there's the sun, and the sun, there's within the sun, there are differentiations. There's the sun globe, and then there's the sunshine. And within the sun globe itself, there's actually a personality of the sun god who's manifesting the power that's coming from the sun. So although the sun is one, it has different aspects at the same time, simultaneously. So the soul, Krishna describes himself as the supreme authority, mamayvamsho jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana, that the soul is an ansha. And so the mistake of the Mayavadis is to say that the Angsha has become the Angshi, or the whole. But actually that there is a difference between the two. And therefore, the prayers personified Vedas state this clearly in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third to the last chapter, that if the soul were the same as God, and they would not be subject to illusion, and they would not be under the control of somebody else, under the supreme controller. They would be independent to act, but they're not. They're dependent, and therefore, to consider them to be the same is not accurate. They do have a difference. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yovidatati kaman. Although they're both eternal, says the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, there's one supreme eternal and there are plural eternals who are eko bahunam yovidatati kaman, dependent on the one supreme eternal. So the difference is there. And as to their, you know, taking instruction, they can exhibit the individual consciousness, actually has personality, has independent will to take or discard the instruction given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Srinivas Acharya's house was being threatened, the Muslims were coming because they had been performing kirtan in Navadvip, and someone called the police. They said these guys are not following Hinduism, they're not following anything, they're just doing their own chant. And they told the Muslims to come, you know, shut them down. And so they were on their way, and Srivas Thakur, that was Srivas Thakur's house, Srivas Angam. Some of the devotees were worried, and Lord Chaitanya said, but I'm the super soul in everyone's heart. When the king comes as the super soul, as he's coming to arrest you and throw your house in the river, I'll instruct him from within his heart to not to do this. But then he said, but if he disregards my instruction, then I'll challenge him personally. And I'll tell him that, okay, if you don't like what we're doing, you bring all of your Muslim clerics to read from the Quran. And they can read it to the animals. We'll bring some cows and some other animals and read it to the animals and see if it has any effect on them. See if it can change the hearts from your Muslim clerics reading the Quran. And then after they don't have any effect, then he said, then I will chant Hare Krishna to those animals, and you'll see how they'll begin to cry and weep in ecstasy when I chant. Anyway, the point was that the soul has individuality and it's an individual existence, and the mistake of the Mayavadis is to equate them as being the same at one time. The mistake isn't seeing that God's energies are everywhere, but it's to say that there's no difference between the two and not recognize the difference. Karunath? Prabhu?
Yeah, they also, just like you're saying, you want to see Krishna everywhere as the president in the car. That's perfectly, a devotee likes to see Krishna everywhere, but the Mayavadis, their offense is that they try to subordinate Krishna's personality, that they say they don't want to see Krishna. They say Krishna's form and personality is illusory, and that the impersonal Brahman is actually the truth, the only truth. And so that they're not, so that you don't have to worry, you're not a Mayavadi. Because you do want to see Krishna's personality. Yeah, because they want to see.
They think Krishna's body is Maya. In other words, when he comes to this world, he's also under the control of the modes of material nature. His body becomes controlled by Maya.
Right. But they say it's a form of goodness or something like that, mode of goodness.
Right.
They don't. But actually, Prabhupada always points out that Adi Shankaracharya himself, in his commentary on the Gita, said Narayana paro avyakta, that Narayan is superior to the unmanifested material nature. But Mayavadis don't accept that. They're so attached to the impersonal, unmanifested feature that they always want to subordinate Krishna's personality to that, and that's their offense. And when they say that I'm just enjoying my lila, Prabhupada always points out, this is not lila, the kind of suffering that you're being forced to die, you're being forced to accept misery and pain, is not lila. That when Krishna allows himself to be conquered by love, it doesn't have that character of suffering that we're experiencing in as being conditioned souls who are actually in Mahamaya.
Thank you. Yes, Ramaswamy and then Bana.
Prabhuji, in the translation of the verse that we have read today, it said, now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart. What misconceptions of duality that Bhishma Dev is talking about here?
Seventy-nine. Thank you. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, now present before me, because now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart, even in the hearts of the mental speculators. He is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. Prabhupada goes into this in the purport, just how, if I can refer back, he says that sometimes people think, the scholars, less intelligent scholars, make a mistake and think that the Krishna of Vrindavan and that in the battlefield of Kurukshetra are different personalities. But for Bhishma Dev, this misconception is completely removed. Even the impersonalist object of destination is Krishna, as the impersonal jyoti, and the yogi's destination of Paramatma is also Krishna. So this is his, going to his... he has a complete understanding of how Krishna and all his different aspects are the same, yet different at one time. And he's realizing that at the end. And he's not under the misconception that there are different aspects or anything separate from Krishna. That's the main idea. Vasudeva Sarvamiti, which Prabhupada refers to in this verse. Vana Prabhu?
I just wanted to point out what Prabhupada had said here in the purport, because it was in light of the discussion. It's very nice the way Prabhupada says this. He says that even the impersonalist object of destination is Krishna, as the impersonal jyoti, and the yogi's destination of Paramatma is also Krishna. Krishna is both Brahma jyoti and localized Paramatma. But in Brahma jyoti or Paramatma, there is no Krishna or sweet relation with Krishna.
Itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam gatanam naradarakena mayashitanam. Wait, I went the opposite way. Dasyam gatanam naradarakena mayashitanam. Yeah, there we go. Let's start over. Itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam gatanam paradarivatena mayashitanam naradarakena sakam vijaru krita punya punja. Thank you. This verse was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, and it refers to what Bhana Prabhu was just bringing up, and that is that from different perspective, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the Supreme Lord is like a mountain, and you can observe him from different angles of vision, and you'll say, oh, he looks like this. Someone else says, no, he looks like that. And it depends how far away or close you are. And in this verse by Shukadeva Goswami, he's referring to the relationships Krishna has with different devotees. So he says that some are enjoying the relationship with Krishna by merging into his Brahman effulgence. Itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya. They're getting some happiness thereby merging. But then there's others who see his, they're in the dasya relationship, servitude, and in Vaikuntha they're worshipping with great awe and reverence. And those who are in the material world, who are in maya, they don't see him at all. they're trying to enjoy the material energy, like starting with annamoy, which means, you know, all they know is something tastes good and they're going to eat it. That's actually Krishna, rasoham apsukonteya, but they don't know it. They're covered by Krishna's external energy. But sakam vijaru krita punya punja, there's some very fortunate souls who have accumulated heaps and heaps of spiritually based sukriti and are playing with Krishna as a cowherd boy. When Krishna entered the arena of wrestling in Mathura before he killed Kamsa, there were all kinds of people in the audience, and they were looking at Krishna as he entered. He was very beautiful. He had just killed Kuvalayapita, and he was sprinkled with some of the blood from the elephant, and he was carrying a tusk over his shoulder. Imagine how tough he looked, you know, walking in the Krishna. And anyway, he was the same Krishna, but everyone saw him differently. The yogis, they looked and they saw, here's Paramatma. They saw Paramatma coming into the wrestling arena. The members of the Yadu dynasty saw the greatest hero. His parents saw, you know, a tender child coming into the gopis and all the other women. They saw Cupid personified coming in. And so according to their state of their heart, they see Krishna in different ways. In Vaikuntha, actually, when Gopakumar goes to Vaikuntha, actually he's just on the outside of Vaikuntha, and he's seeing all different kinds of forms of life that he's used to, you know, the variety of the earthly planet coming in and out of Vaikuntha, and different forms of animals, and they're all actually devotees who had attained Swarupya Mukti, their spiritual forms. And so he inquired, how are they in all these different forms? And Krishna also, as we know from the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he comes in many different, in all the different species of life, right? You know the verse? Devatirya Naradishu, that he comes in all the different forms of life, even in animals, he manifests different incarnations, like the fish, the tortoise, things like that. And sometimes when the devotees in Vaikuntha, when they even think of him, when they meditate on his different forms in Swarupya Mukti, they actually they take on that form themselves. It's a spiritual form, but out of ecstasy, they transform and they take on that form. My point is that there's unlimited variety in the material world, and there's unlimited variety in the spiritual world. And when Krishna speaks the message of the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna on the battlefield, before the battlefield starts on the chariot, he's speaking, Arjuna's listening and asking questions. And when Arjuna said, now my illusion is finished, it's not that there's one Krishna left over of one person. There's still two people. It's just that one's now liberated and willing to act according to the instruction of the other one. So there's still two. And the Mayavadis make the mistake that after one clears one's illusion, then all realize that actually the speaker and the person listening are one person, and they and it's just one entity altogether. But it, the fact is, Krishna is one entity, Advaita Gyan Tattva, but he's manifest in many different varieties. And that's what makes for Ananda, because without variety, there's no Ananda. There's no happiness, no bliss. Om Tat Sat. Yes, last point. But we need a microphone for it.
Regarding your last point, which was Arjun's illusion gets cleared and he then surrenders. Merger is one view, but the other is that the identity is still maintained, that Arjun now will engage in a devotional relationship, that in Mayavadi philosophy there is no room for devotional relationship. And so Ananda, which comes from devotional relationship, that type of Ananda won't exist, because they say that the identity is destroyed, whereas in Bhagavata philosophy, this identity gets maintained, so the devotee then relates to the Lord in an eternal way to get Ananda.
Thank you. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gopakta Vrinda ki jai, Goprimanande.